The Syrian civil war is now entering its fifth year. The death toll is above 200,000 and 6.5 million people have been displaced. Meanwhile, the militant group ISIS has emerged and expanded in both Syria and Iraq.
Beginning early in the conflict, various members of President Obama's cabinet and lawmakers called for American military intervention. The president decided against it. Later, the president said the Assad regime's use of chemical weapons was the red line which would trigger U.S. military intervention. A new Frontline documentary called Obama at War takes a look at that moment and beyond.
Obama's having second thoughts. He's feeling alone. His friends in Britain say, yes, we're with you, but then Parliament says, no, we're not.
It is clear to me that the British Parliament, reflecting the views of the British people, does not want to see British military action. I get that, and the government will act accordingly.
When the Islamic State, known as ISIS, directly threatened the U.S. last year, the president announced airstrikes against the group and allocated funds to train rebel fighters. Some say the president should have acted earlier. Others say it made sense to stay out of the fight. Frontline investigates those arguments in Obama at War. It airs tonight at 9 on your local public television station. Producer and reporter Martin Smith joins us now. Martin, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
So in the early days of the Syrian civil war, did the Obama administration see any reason for the U.S. to intervene?
Well, I think they saw no reason to get involved initially because everybody in the region and all the observers in the United States, practically everyone, thought that Assad was going to fall in a matter of weeks, if not maybe months. But he looked like his days were numbered. We'd seen the fall of the dictator in Tunisia as well as Mubarak stepping down in Egypt. And so it just didn't seem, it seemed like he was going to be gone very quickly. So they didn't do anything at that point. But they did, the president went forward and said, you know, it's time for him to leave.
And as the U.S. watched as events unfolded, did the U.S. have the problem of wondering, well, if the U.S. got involved, who should we back?
It was a very difficult set of choices facing the administration, and that's what we try to outline in the program. There's a lot of criticism from the Syrian so-called moderate or pro-Western opposition that says that because we didn't help them, they dwindled in number and the extremists were able to gain a foothold and eventually become dominant. But when the president was looking out at this, he didn't see reliable partners. It wasn't as clear as people would have you believe that there were moderates who were model of the kind of army that we would want to support. And there was also the question of if you give them arms, what if those arms end up in the hands of an al-Qaeda-linked group? Or if the group is successful, let's say, and they topple Assad, who's going to replace him? Our record in the Middle East of toppling dictators, whether it's Gaddafi or Hussein, have not been, our record is not very good. So there were a lot of legitimate questions that the president was dealing with, although most of his national security cabinet members were in favor of giving arms to the rebels, to getting skin in the game, if you will.
And it sounds as though as the civilian death toll began to rise, one question that was on the table with the administration was, is Syria another Rwanda? Is it the Balkans? How did the administration try to answer that question?
Well, very good point. And in the president's inner circle was Samantha Power, who wrote the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, A Problem from Hell, America and the Age of Genocide. And she was saying to the president, look, you don't want to act, but there are consequences, you know, to not acting here. Finally, the president listened to her, listened to others, but decided to stay out. He didn't think he had reliable partners, was worried about the consequences of getting involved. And, of course, the American people didn't want to be involved here. And even though there were some people on Capitol Hill calling for us to create, safe havens for the rebels, the majority of people in Congress were not in favor of getting America involved in another Middle Eastern war.
And then came the famous press conference where Chuck Todd threw a question to the president, and the president came up with the use of chemical weapons as a red line. How did that come out?
Well, it didn't go down very well with his aides, who were surprised that he said it. It wasn't as if he went to a press conference and gave a statement. It was a question at the end of a press conference about other things, Medicare and Afghanistan and whatnot, that this question came up, and the president is improvising at this point. And he says, well, if he uses chemical weapons, that would be a red line for us. If he does that, if there's movement on the chemical weapons front, there will be, quote-unquote, enormous consequences. So now the president has painted himself into a corner, because now if Assad doesn't back down, what is the president going to do? And we track very carefully those moments as the tension mounted over just what was the United States going to do.
And Assad didn't back down, at least not on the chemical weapons. They were used, and that red line had been crossed. So as you saw it in the documentary, what unfolded next?
Well, he repeatedly pushed the limits to testing the president. The president then orders the military to get ready. Ships move into the eastern Mediterranean. The missiles are loaded. We're all ready to go. The strike is set for August 31st. This is 2013. And then on a Friday night, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the top military authority in the country, General Dempsey, gets a phone call from the president. He describes it, and he says, look, our finger was on the trigger, but I got a phone call. He told me to stand down. The president then conferred with his chief of staff, and they decided, in order to get political cover, they would take this decision to strike or not to strike to Congress. Well, that surprised his aides as well, because going to Congress, it was pretty clear that he was most likely not going to get backing. So it's a dramatic sequence in the middle of the documentary. The outcome of that is finally that in another offhand remark by Secretary of State Kerry, he's asked a question and asked, how can Assad avoid a military strike? This was presuming that Congress would even approve it. He said, well, he could just give up his chemical weapons. And then he says, but he's not going to do it. So, you know, he just sort of tossed it off. Well, the Russian foreign minister, chief ally to the Syrian regime, took that up and went to his counterpart, the foreign minister of Syria, and got Assad, the dictator, to agree. And it was diffused at the 11th hour without striking. But but there were even consequences to that.
We're talking about the new Frontline documentary, Obama at War. You can catch it tonight at 9 o'clock on your local public TV station. And we're talking with producer and reporter Martin Smith right now. And to look a little more closely at that moment when the U.S. didn't intervene after that red line had been crossed, as someone puts it in the documentary, he blinked. What do you know about what happened to turn him in that moment?
Well, he didn't have political cover. And as the clip that you ran at the top of this segment, he was feeling alone. He knew that Prime Minister Cameron in England was not getting the backing of his parliament, so the English were not going to come on board with this operation. People were backing off. He didn't feel that he had the political cover. And keep in mind that always this is a president who promised not to start wars, but to end wars. And so that weighs heavily, and he, I believe, takes that as seriously or more seriously than anything, than any other promise that he's made. So at the 11th hour, he blinks because he decides that he's not going to go forward with this unless he has sufficient political cover, which he didn't really have.
And so after this, we see the rise of ISIS. ISIS emerges, and eventually the president decides it is time to call for airstrikes. What got us to that point where the U.S. is then ready to intervene?
ISIS took advantage of the decision of the United States not to intervene, and they said to the Syrian people, and they said, the United States doesn't have your back. You know, the president made a threat, then he doesn't carry it through. So if you want protection from Assad, from the dictator, and all these atrocities, you know, we'll protect you. And so that gained them some credence. But when they moved into Mosul in northern Iraq, came out of Syria into Mosul, and were expanding their territory, seemingly an unstoppable force last summer, the president felt compelled to act. And so he began to try and help push them back. But still, he doesn't want to put U.S. troops on the ground. And so running a successful campaign against a group like ISIS from the air, if you don't have reliable partners on the ground, is a tall order.
How did ISIS gain such momentum when really Assad had been the big target for Syrian opposition all along?
Well, they were among the groups. Well, let's back up a little bit. The group that we now call ISIS, its roots are in Iraq. It's the old Al-Qaeda in Iraq that we, the United States, was fighting back when troops were there back in 2006, 7, 8. That group was pretty much decimated by 2011 when the United States left, but they move into Syria where this civil war is going on and there's a lot of open spaces that they can exploit, and they get oil wells and they have an extortion racket going. And as Assad is more brutal, they gain sort of a credibility in their own brutality because they're willing to stand up to that kind of atrocity by dishing out atrocities of their own against Assad's forces or against other rebel groups. And eventually, many of the moderates who haven't received much aid from the West are discouraged. They either quit or they join with extremist groups like the Al-Qaeda group or in some cases, ISIS. So ISIS grows while the rest of the moderate opposition dwindles.
And one question that you tackle as we wrap up here, what if the president had bombed Syria in the early days when that red line was crossed? Would we still have seen this rise of ISIS?
You know, that's the experiment that we don't have, you know, we don't have a control group in the experiment here. There's no alternative reality in which we could see what would happen. And I think it's an open question. I don't think necessarily that would have changed. I think you could make a better argument that getting involved earlier, aggressively, diplomatically in the region, and perhaps in arming the rebels might have made a difference. But even there, I think it's a very hard call. I don't think, you know, this was an interesting documentary to make because I don't think there are clear answers or clear conclusions. I think historians are going to be arguing for a very long time about what we should have done or could have done that would have made this turn out differently. But what we do know now is we've got a major tragedy on our hands and the number of dead and the potential destabilization of an entire region.
Martin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We have been talking to Martin Smith, frontline producer and reporter. His documentary, Obama at War, airs tonight at 9 on your local public television station.